Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call. I am Mary Lou Bedford, and I am the CEO of the Central Palm Beach County Chamber of Commerce. And on behalf of our chair, John Carter, our board of directors, and staff, we want to welcome you. This morning, you will hear from our guest speaker, Clark Thomason Jackson. She's the senior manager of Southeastern Region of the Congressional and Public Affairs Division for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We will hear from Clark in just a moment, but before we start, I want to let you know that this call will be recorded for future reference. All participants will be muted on the call to avoid background noise and disruptions. But if you have questions for our speaker during the call, please email us at info@cpbchamber.com. Again, that's info@cpbchamber.com, as we will be monitoring your emails live during the call. We will get to as many calls as and questions as time allows, but we want to thank you for those who have already emailed your questions prior to the call. With 2.5 million small businesses in Florida, we realize these are challenging times for everyone, and especially for small businesses. In this unprecedented time, as most of us are sheltering in place and working remotely, we want to make sure that our businesses in Palm Beach County are getting the most updated information. Hopefully, you have received our updates, and we can also continue to update those on our website. So if you go to our website at cpbchamber.com, we give you the most important and helpful information daily. So make sure you check out our website. Again, that is at cpbchamber.com. We want to thank you all of our wonderful partnerships that we have throughout the county, the state, and federally as we continue to inform you. And we'll get through this all together. I know it's a difficult time, but we're here to support you at the Chamber. We're grateful to the U.S. Chamber and especially for Clark for being on the call today as she shares with us some very important details on the CARES Act. And with that, Clark, I will turn it over to you. And again, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Mary Lou. I'm really happy to be here today. I understand that this is extremely uncertain times for businesses, particularly small businesses, who are struggling to get through this period of time. And so us at the U.S. Chamber are giving these briefings to chambers across the country to help you guys get more prepared in order to access the programs and the loans that were offered through the CARES Act. So I'm going to do about 20 minutes or so on what was available in the CARES Act, and then I'm happy to answer questions that you may have further than what I describe now. So just to give you an idea of the scale, this is a $2 trillion package. It's just under 10% of our regular GDP in our country. This package is designed to be robust, because the idea is that this is a bridge that helps us avoid a prolonged recession and downturn and allows that once regular commerce can begin resuming, we can move back to regular commerce. In addition to the $2 trillion in face value of the package, because some of the funds can be used by the Federal Reserve, it can be leveraged to provide an additional $4 trillion in support of the economy. We'll talk a little bit first about the individual provisions. Perhaps the most important is the automatic payments that the federal government is making to the individual taxpayers. They'll begin the process of direct depositing these funds to taxpayers across the country. The amount is $1,200 per individual, $2,400 for joint returns, plus $500 per child. And it begins to phase out for incomes above $75,000 for individuals and $150,000 in joint income. Now, we already know, as of earlier this week, over 10 million initial unemployment claims have been filed. And as much as the federal government is trying to support business, we're going to have a rise in unemployment almost irrespective. So the bill includes some fairly robust expansions of unemployment benefits. Most importantly, most restrictions on eligibility for unemployment. So remember, if you go through unemployment applying for assistance, there are all these qualifications about how long you've been employed, how long you'll have to wait, et cetera. those eligibility requirements have been amended as it relates to the coronavirus. In addition, the federal government is providing another $600 per week on top of the regular state benefit through July 31st. So states simply have to agree to accept this additional benefit for their residents. A lot of questions have come up about whether or not individuals will remain on unemployment, particularly given the enhanced benefit. So it's important to remember that eligibility ends when an individual can return to work. So if an employer is reopening and calling back employees, and that employee is available to work and they choose not to work, then their individual eligibility ends. How do you access this? So this still goes through your state unemployment office. You don't go to the federal government for this benefit. You go to your state unemployment office. So let's talk a little bit about the major provisions for employers. We've broken it down into three groups: the provisions that are available to all employers, the provisions that are available to larger employers, and then small businesses, self-employed, independent contractors, and nonprofits, which is where we'll spend the bulk of our time today. We'll start with the provisions that are available to all employers. The first is a payroll tax provision for employers who pay payroll taxes. So think about this. Everyone who's writing a check to their employees, after you write that check, you normally write another check to the federal government covering the payroll taxes for both the employee and the employer side. Under this bill, an employer may choose to delay their payment of their portion of the payroll taxes, which is 6.2% of Social Security wages. They can delay paying that between now and January 1st, 2021. If they choose to delay, they have to pay 50% of the accumulated amount that they would have owed by December 31st, 2021, and the remaining 50% on December 31st, 2022. There's an important caveat here. This is generally available to all employers, except if you've had a loan forgiven under the Paycheck Protection Program. And this is the small business loan program we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes. Another tax change that is important is net operating losses, or NOLs. If you've had a business who has an operating loss and you want to be able to use that against prior taxes paid, now operating losses are expanded from 2018, 2019, and 2020, and generally can be carried back 5 years. This also applies to pass-throughs and sole proprietors. If you're a business, this is primarily for corporations that have AMT credits. You can accelerate the recovery of those. You also have the opportunity to increase your interest deductibility for 2019 and 2020. And importantly, for restaurants and retail establishments who in the past couple of years have made investments in their property, they can accelerate the recovery of that as well. So remember, all these provisions are really centered around one idea: improving liquidity for employers. So at the moment, when employers have no revenue coming in, it's really hard to pay the bills. And so all of these provisions give employers greater access to liquidity. So it's not so much about is reducing overall taxes as it is about the timing and giving employers to more access to cash today to be able to pay their employees. Another provision that's available to all employers is the Employee Retention Credit. Now, this is a late addition to the bill. The earlier draft didn't include this provision, so as a result, there hasn't been as much attention paid to it as there are some of the other programs. The retention credit generally applies to all employers. We're talking about businesses, but also nonprofits, for example, who are fully or partially shut down as a result of the coronavirus or have had a 50% drop in their gross receipts in a quarter. And they're eligible for this until their gross receipts get back up to 80% of their prior year's amount. Think about it this way. This is designed to help employers who've shut down or lost revenue, but who continue to pay their employees. So how much is this credit worth? It's 50% of the wages paid by the employer up to $10,000 per employee. And that's a fully refundable tax credit. So think about this as a $5,000 tax credit available to the employer per employee. There are special rules for employers with more than 100 employees and employers with less than 100 employees. So if you have more than 100 employees, the benefit only applies to employees who you are paying but are not providing services. So think about it this way. Your business is shut down. You've had this drop in revenue. Your employee is not working. They're not teleworking, but you continue to pay them. You can access this credit as a benefit in recognition of the fact that you're paying them. If you have 100 or less employees, the requirement that they be providing, not be providing services doesn't apply. It's available to all the employees you pay during this eligible period. And again, the eligible period being when you're shut down or when you have a quarter with this drop in gross receipts relative to the prior year. So importantly here again, the Paycheck Protection Program, that's the Small Business Loan Grant Program we're going to talk about. If you receive one of those loans, because it can be converted into a grant, you cannot take advantage of the Employee Retention Credit. Now, we understand that employers may have cash flow problems, and one of the things for employers who take advantage of this retention credit is we expect Treasury will be providing guidance that will allow employers to get an advance on the payment of the credit, which will help them pay employees today. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about mid and larger employers. So that's employers with over 500 employees generally. The bill includes in total $500 billion to the Treasury Department to support loans, loan guarantees, and Federal Reserve credit facilities. Now, Federal Reserve credit facilities, you may have heard about these. These are things that the Federal Reserve is creating, and for example, to support commercial paper, money market funds, and they do these as a regular course of business when we have a financial crisis. They were used robustly, for example, in 2008. The remainder, $454 billion of that $500 billion, is directly for businesses at large, but there is about a $6 billion benefit in special programs for the airline industry and critical national security businesses that make up the remainder of that $454 to $500 billion. We expect in the coming days we'll see the Federal Reserve issue more guidance about these credit facilities and actually launch them, including the terms and conditions. And this is something we're on the lookout for this week, actually. But remember, this is not going to be a situation most likely where a company goes directly to the Treasury Department or the Federal Reserve. Instead, the Federal Reserve is going to be supporting financial institutions in the U.S. For them to make more loans available. There are some restrictions that go along with this in exchange for accepting the benefit. It could include stock buybacks by the company so long as their loan is pending and for an additional year, and some limits on increasing executive compensation. So now we'll talk a little bit more about small businesses, self-employed, independent contractors, and nonprofits. And this is where we'll really spend the bulk of our time. The provision that's getting the most attention is called the Paycheck Protection Program. It's $349 billion in loans for small businesses. That's generally defined as an employer with less than 500 employees, 501c3s, self-employed, sole proprietors, and independent contractors. A way of thinking about this is if your business is generally qualified for an SBA program, you're going to qualify under this program. And in addition to that, some employers who would not qualify have been added to the list. And that includes, for example, independent contractors and self-employed. It also includes restaurants and hotel folks who would otherwise be ineligible because if you add up all of their locations, they have more than 500 employees. But under this bill, it says we're going to judge you as on a per-location basis. So don't automatically assume because you're not eligible for a regular SBA program that you're not eligible for the Paycheck Protection Program. How much can you borrow? So you can borrow up to 2.5 months of your average payroll expenses. There's a formula to calculate average monthly payroll, and then once that's calculated, you multiply that by 2.5, except the loan can't exceed $10 million. Where will you get this loan? So folks are asking us, do you go to the SBA? Do you go to your lender? We expect that you will go to just local and national lenders for this program. Just as of Friday, they released a large list of local and national lenders that are available for this program, and we believe that more will be coming online in the coming days. And we think that there's going to be a really generous offering of lenders, mostly because this program is backed 100% by the federal government, and there's some pretty good benefit to lenders for lending these loans. There are very minimal requirements as far as underwriting the loans. There's no collateral required, no personal guarantee is required, and a really unique feature of this loan is that the loans can convert into grants based off of what the borrower spends the money on. So the way the bill is laid out, it looks at the 8 weeks of your expenses after the date of the origination of the loan, and you get to tally up everything that you spent on payroll, that you spent on rent for the business, interest on mortgages tied to the business, and what you spent on utilities, and you can get dollar-for-dollar forgiveness on your loan up to that amount. And, of course, your forgiveness can't exceed the amount you actually borrowed. When we received the initial final rule, the interim final rule, I guess, it did say that you have to spend 75% of your loan on payroll. You can only spend up to 25% of your loan on those other costs like utilities and interest on your mortgage and rent for your business. So keep that in mind. There are some conditions. Your loan forgiveness is reduced proportionately. If you reduce the number of employees that you had relative to a benchmark period, and that's for businesses that were in operation in 2019, that's the previous 12 months, so all of 2019, or if you weren't operational in 2019, you can use January 1st, 2020 through February 29th, 2020. The loan forgiveness is also reduced if you reduce the wages for employees making less than $100,000, more than 25%. So that's a good note about the $100,000 in wages. So in your calculation of payroll expenses, you get to count the first $100,000 that you paid an employee, but nothing beyond that. This is really targeted towards middle-income earners. So employers can also avoid a reduction in the forgiveness because we know a lot of employers have already had to lay people off. If they bring employees back and restore their wages by June 30th of this year. So think about it this way. You've laid off employees or reduced their wages or hours of some employees to help you get through this difficult period of time. If you made those reductions between February 15th and April 26th, you'll need to restore those employees and or bring them back up to their previous wages by June 30th in order to get your loan forgiven as a grant. Additionally, after April 26th, you can't make any changes to your number of employees or the wages of your employees until after June 30th in order to be forgiven. Now, if you laid off an employee or reduced hours prior to February 15th of this year, you don't have to restore them to qualify for forgiveness. So again, here what the government is incentivizing with the Paycheck Protection Program is it really wants to give money through small businesses, money for them to keep paying their employees. We often get asked, what if the business is shut down or you happen to be in an area where the governor has said essential businesses, only essential businesses can open? That doesn't matter for the purpose of the Paycheck Protection Program. What the loan looks at is after taking the loan, were you paying your employees? Now, remember, the goal of lawmakers in creating this program was to provide assistance essentially in the form of grants to small businesses and encourage those small businesses to keep paying their employees. You can learn more about this program. I think Mary Lou has already sent you an email, our four-step guide to the Paycheck Protection Program. It's available at www.uschamber.com/SBLoans, that's like small business loans. And it is a four-step guide that walks you through every single step. Am I eligible? What is the lender looking for? How much can I borrow? How do I calculate my average payroll cost? And it goes through the exact method in which you you calculate your payroll cost. What's excluded in your payroll cost? Will this loan be forgiven, and how much, and what can I spend my money on? And if I do have to reduce employees during this period of time, how does the reduction in forgiveness calculate it? And it goes through that as well, because we do understand that people lose employees irrespective of the coronavirus. And so if you do have a reduction in 25%, whether it be in wages or the amount of people, there is a calculation on that guide that tells you exactly how that forgiveness will be calculated. So I really encourage you to use that guide before you go in to your lender to ask for how much you will be borrowing. Okay, so another provision that benefits small businesses, the self-employed, independent contractors, and nonprofits is the SBA Economic Injury Disaster Loans, also known as EIDL loans. EIDL loans have been around a long time, and if you happen to have been affected by a hurricane or a tornado, for example, you might have applied for and received an EIDL loan. So who's eligible? Small businesses and nonprofits, including faith-based. It's any entity or nonprofit that has fewer than 500 employees, and again, here, sole proprietors and independent contractors. So this is an actual loan. This is not a loan that in general will convert to a grant. You can borrow up to $2 million in working capital that's repaid over 30 years at an interest rate of 3.75%. And for nonprofits, it's 2.75%. If you take out this loan, payments are deferred for up to a year, and so you don't have to immediately start repaying this loan. They made it easier for individual businesses to apply. Your loan is going to be based on your credit scores. You don't have to immediately produce tax returns. You can get up to $200,000 without a personal guarantee, and no collateral is required for $25,000 or less. So beyond that, there's a general security interest, or sometimes it's secured with real estate, but they're really trying to move away from real estate in this particular instance. There's an important feature that's brand new as a result of the CARES Act. So if you're applying for an EIDL loan, you can request that you be provided an emergency grant up to $10,000. So it's not an automatic $10,000, but it's up to $10,000. The bill details what you may use this grant for, but there are no requirements. So this $10,000 grant does not have to be repaid, even if you're denied the loan. So you apply for the loan, you request the emergency grant, you receive it, and then you're denied the loan. You still don't have to pay back that $10,000. So you should think about this as essentially an emergency grant for small businesses. There's important interactions with the Paycheck Protection Program that we just talked about. So importantly, if you end up with both the EIDL and PPP, and generally you would end up with both because you've already received an EIDL loan, and then maybe now that paycheck protection loans are available, you're applying for one of those, you can roll your EIDL loan into your paycheck protection loan, but you just can't get double forgiveness. So the $10,000 would come off of the paycheck protection program's forgiveness. You can talk to your lender about how to do this. There's also some requirements with respect to the paycheck protection loans that you can't double dip. So in other words, you can't take out two loans to pay the same bills. And if you're doing the Paycheck Protection Program, you can use that loan for payroll, rent, utilities, interest on your mortgage. So if you're then, in addition, applying for an EIDL loan, be sure that you check and see what all you can pay for, what you can use those funds for an EIDL loan that aren't those four things. because you don't want to be in a situation where you've gotten a paycheck protection program and you have to use the money on payroll and interest and rent and utilities, and then you're stuck with an EIDL loan that you've borrowed and you don't have additional things to use it for. So just be careful when you're looking at both of these loans and make sure that you're not stacking them up on top of each other. What they've done is they've made the Paycheck Protection Program the most favorable. Then they've tacked on these other programs that don't avail themselves to Paycheck Protection Loan, and that includes this EIDL loan. So you don't apply for an EIDL loan through a local bank. You apply for this on the SBA website at sba.gov. And we have heard that there has been some lag time with SBA, and we're trying to work with the SBA to make sure that these loans are processing in a quick manner. However, it's just they have been inundated with the amount of folks that are applying for these EIDL loans, and so I do know that there's some lag. So if you already applied for an EIDL loan and you haven't heard back, just be patient. They're working through them, and I've heard it can take, you know, 3 or 4 days to hear back, you know, whether or not you get, like, an application number. So I think I will stop there, Mary Lou. I just want to go ahead and reiterate that paycheck protection guide that Mary Lou sent to you all. Please, please visit that website. It also, if you use it as a website and not as an attachment, it's a live website, so we're updating it as the federal government continues to put out more guidance. So the initial guide was based on what the bill said, and then as the Federal Reserve and as SBA and so forth move forward with these programs, they're releasing additional guidance, and we're updating that in real time. So what's on there now is the most recent, although we did get a little bit more guidance this morning, so maybe this afternoon check back. But we're updating that guide in real time, and I really just encourage you to use that before you go to your lender. Okay, I'll turn it back over to you, Mary Lou.
Thank you so much, Clark. And we do have that link on our website as well at thecppchamber.com. So if you need to refer to that. And we have quite a few questions for you, Clark. As we've been going through the call, we've received questions prior to the call, and we've had quite a few live as we're monitoring it. So let me get started and see if we can answer as many calls or questions as we have possible during this time. So okay. The first question for you, Clark, is from Hope Barron from Barron & Cogan CPAs, and she wants to know exactly what type of documentation is required for the PPP loan.
Okay, so I hope I don't sound like a broken record, but they're on that Paycheck Protection Guide that we released, there is a link to the application that you'll need to fill out from the Treasury Department. You can also just Google PPP loan application, and you'll want to fill out that application and take it to your lender. I will say this morning they released some guidance for the lenders, and what they asked was, when a small business or a borrower shows up, are we required to double check their documentation and make sure they're not asking for too much money? And the answer is no. The lender does not do that. So that is your responsibility to know how much your payroll costs are, to do that calculation ahead of time so that when you show up and ask for the money, you're only asking for as much as you can be forgiven for, unless, of course, you want to pay back the percentage of the loan that you can't be forgiven for. So that's on the small business to make sure and do that calculation of your payroll, average payroll cost.
Okay, great. And we have a question from Linda Gaddy, who's an independent contractor in the travel industry, but actually we've gotten this from quite a few people. Where can we find a list, particularly of Palm Beach County, of the participating partners in the SBA loan so people know where to go?
That's a great question. And I'm not exactly sure the answer to that one. I do know that a lot of chambers are putting together a list of lenders that are available in their area, so that may be something you look into. I would assume that you could go on to the Treasury's website and look for lenders. I do know that if a lender is an existing SBA 7A program lender, they're automatically qualified for the PPP program. So there are already a lot of lenders who are already qualified. And then, of course, the Treasury Department was approving additional lenders. So I hope that's a little bit helpful. But you can find that information on the Internet. I can look that up and try to find more information for your area.
Okay, great. And we'll do the same. We'll try to research and coordinate it together so we can get that list. And as you stated earlier, Clark, there's quite a few other banks and financial institutions that are trying to come on board with this. So we'll continue to update that list as well as we move forward. So thank you for that. We have a question from Nicole Sampas. Will small business be taxed on the $10,000 grant from the government?
So I actually asked this question of our tax lobbyist prior to the call, but I just got an answer. So a Deloitte expert. So I'm not taking. Don't put this on me. But a Deloitte expert just agreed that no, forgiveness loans are not taxable.
Okay, so they're not. Okay, great. That helps a lot for people who are, because I had several people asking me that question. Okay, we had a question from Dr. Gunawar Dean. Other than the PPP, what other low-interest loans are available for small business, like a physician practice, through the CARES Act or SBA?
Mm-hmm. Through the CARES Act and SBA, both. This EIDL loan that I spoke about is the other low-interest loan, so it's 3.75% for a small business, up to $2 million in working capital. And those loans, again, have been around for a long time, but they've expanded the program to include independent contractors and sole proprietors.
Okay, great. And then, we've had quite a few people ask about this. Clark, is there a priority or size of an account that a PPP participating banks that are, are they utilizing this when receiving applications for existing business, the size of the account? Are you aware of that at all?
So we've heard some issues with in the past few days, because these came online on Friday and we're just now at Tuesday, that a lot of existing lenders, some of your bigger banks particularly, have prioritized existing, and not even that, I shouldn't say that, not even just bigger banks, all banks, are prioritizing their existing customers. Some of that is just because it's easier paperwork-wise and they're trying to work through this workload in a quick way, and so they prioritize those. And there's nothing in the law that says they have to accept everyone, so they can pick and choose who they want to lend, just like any other loan. However, because it's 100% federally backed by the federal 100% backed by the federal government, we don't expect that to be an issue with all banks. So there was also an issue with the Federal Reserve and some guidance that they released yesterday, where lenders hit a certain sort of like a flag flies up when they lend too much money. And so a lot of banks were worried about that provision. And I'm sorry, I'm not a banking expert. So I'm trying to explain this in as best I can with what little bit I know, but there is something that flags banks from lending over a certain amount. And so banks were concerned about that. And so I think that was initially some of the issues with some of these banks lending out loans. However, Treasury released guidance yesterday that sort of alleviated some of that and will help sort of fix that problem. So lenders aren't concerned about how much how much they're lending out and their risks in those. Anyway, that's sort of the best I can describe it. But just, I guess, also moving forward, we're going to see a lot more lenders come on board. If you can't find a lender that will take you on right now, just stay on board, and there are going to be lots of new lenders, and I promise there's going to be someone who wants to take your loan.
Okay, great. And then we've had several questions from employers, you know, discussing their employees, which is, you know, such an important asset to their business, and, you know, a lot have had to make difficult decisions. But some of them want to know those who have maybe were let go prior to this, or even were fired for poor work performance. Is there any type of forgiveness for those individuals? And what would you recommend, you know, especially those who, you know, their employees are not working right now? Do they keep paying them even if they're not working? So if you could.
Okay. The question has a couple of questions, I think. The first is, if you you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, but if you want to get the Paycheck Protection Loan, there are some restrictions on who you can fire and who you can let off in order to get forgiveness for the loan. So again, the Paycheck Protection Program, it can be converted to a grant if you follow all the guidelines for forgiveness, but you don't have to follow all the guidelines for forgiveness, first of all. You can get the loan. It's at a very low interest rate, so it's 1%, and you have to pay that within 2 years, which is a very low interest rate loan. So you can do it as a loan if you'd like to do that. And that also for the gentleman who is a physician, he can apply for a PPP loan if he prefer that. But there are some restrictions with how your employees, in the sense that if you've already laid off employees after February 15th of this year, you must bring them back. And if you have just reduced wages or hours for your employees, you have to bring those back up to your average monthly payroll from 2019 in order to get forgiveness for the loan. So, again, the reason why they included the Paycheck Protection Program in the bill was that we understand that there is that benefit for unemployment, and that those people aren't going to necessarily be left without money. So that's not the issue. The issue is the program wanted to keep employees employed. So it wants to give money through small businesses so that they keep paying their employees so that they don't go on unemployment. So we're trying to reduce the amount of people who go on unemployment. So they're giving these loans as grants to small businesses so they keep them on. Even if they're not open, even if their employees aren't working, even if they're paying them to sit at home, they're keeping them on the payroll as opposed to on the unemployment roll. So also the idea is that when the federal government says we can return to work and commerce can resume, we want everybody to be prepared and ready to start back that day. Open your business back up. Your employees are ready to go. You already have them on, you know, as opposed to having to call back employees. And so there's a lag time for employers to be able to get back and resume regular commerce. So I know that's a really long answer to a question, but that's the intent behind the bill. So, there are ways that you can fire employees, but in order for you to get the forgiveness, you have to bring them back up to where you were in 2019 by June 30th of this year. And there is a 25% reduction rate included in there just for those instances where you have someone who doesn't show up to work and you need to fire them, so that you're not penalized.
Okay, great. You know, we did get a lot of questions, which you already answered when you were presenting, of how do we calculate the forgiveness amount. And again, that will be on our website as well as yours, so people can go back in there and review that. And, you know, as we continue to go on, Dr. Gunawardene came back again with another question and wanted to know if the disaster fund are taxable. The PPP disaster funds are taxable. And I know you've mentioned that before, but if you'll just go over that one more time.
So I don't know about the PPP. Okay. The $10,000 emergency grant from the SBA through the EIDL loan program is, we think, not taxable. However, the funds from the PPP, I'm just going to say yes, because I'm assuming they are, but I'm not sure. It's an income stream, so you would assume that it would be taxable, but I can get back to you on that.
Okay, great. Okay, so as we close this with up today, you know, for any of those who did not get your question answered, or if you have other questions for Clark or for the chamber, please reach out to us again at info@cpbchamber.com. We will go ahead and reach out to you and answer those questions, you know, as quickly as we can. But I do have one more question that just came in. Can you go into specifics as to which special districts would qualify for the PPP loan? So do you have that, Clark?
Special district?
It says, can you go into specifics as to which special districts would qualify for the PPP loan?
I don't know what they mean by special districts.
Okay. Because at this time, as you understand it, everyone would qualify. There's no...
Well, it's not done in districts.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all employers, small businesses, sole proprietors, independent contractors with 1099s are all qualified. The only thing you have to do when you show up is you have to fill out your average monthly payroll, and then you just have to certify it with good faith that the uncertainty of the current economic conditions makes the loan request necessary for your operations to keep going, that you'll use the loan to retain workers and maintain payroll, that the borrower does not have an application pending for a loan duplicative of the purpose of the amount applied here. So you can't just go all around town and apply for this loan. From February 15th to December 31st of this year, the borrower has not received a loan, so this isn't duplicative of a loan you've already received. Those are the only things that you need to show up. And then, of course, you know, your business has to be a small business with less than 500 employees or a 501c3 or a sole proprietor or an independent contractor or self-employed that carries a trade, a tribal business, or a 501c19, a veterans organization. Those are really the only things that you qualify. I went through again. There are a couple of exemptions there with the food and services, accommodation services sector, and franchisees who wouldn't otherwise be eligible for an SBA loan, but they're eligible for this program. So I'm not sure about special districts, but everyone is eligible. I will say, though, too, this is a word of caution. I would act quickly on this. We've seen that about 10% of the funds have already been distributed at this point, and we're about 2 days in. So I would encourage you to download that guide, download the application, work through it very quickly, and see a lender. When the funds are gone, the funds are gone. And we don't know if Congress will appropriate more funds for this program. They could, but we don't know that. So when the $349 billion has been used, it has been used. So I encourage you, and we encourage all of our chamber friends to really make sure and push this program, and don't wait to see what happens, because we don't know that it'll last more than another 15 days, really.
Gotcha. And then our final question for you, Clark, is we've had several people ask about this. Can you comment on borrowing from your 401k, some of the stipulations of that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I will ask if there are any changes in the CARES Act about or any, I guess, allowances for you to borrow from your 401k? That's a good question. I haven't had it yet. So.
Okay. Great. And then once we get that information, we'll also go ahead and make sure that we get that information on our website as well. So I'll follow back up with you on that.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Well, we want to thank everyone for joining us today. Again, if you have questions about what you heard on the call, we do have a recording that will be put on our website, and so you can review it, and also the link for what Clark mentioned for the U.S. Chamber and all the information and questions that you had. And we'll continue to update that with you information with you each day as we get it. And we just want to remind everyone today is Takeout Tuesday, so if you could support your local restaurants, I know they would really appreciate that. And Clark, I can't thank you again enough for your time in the U.S. Chamber for all you're doing. Again, all of our partners out there who are helping us getting information out to all of you. And we just ask you to stay healthy and have a great rest of the day. Thank you so much for joining us, and take care.
Thank you.
Thanks.